Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Hey there, all you space explorers, and welcome to what is not a new episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week we'll get our first official episode of Tom's Prerogative, but I thought I'd give you a little retro review. Like I said before on the launch podcast, was going back to audio and starting doing Tom's Prerogative for, Shaft Podcast, and so when the news broke of Shaft ending, the last episode I did was on High School of the Dead. And I thought it'd be fun, and this is something I'm going to do throughout the, lifespan of the Absolution Network. I'm going to have retro reviews, which go back to reviews that me or people from the site, from previous podcasts, so you can see our history, at least that are entertaining. And it was at least it was my last episode for the Shaft Network, and also it had something to do with the holiday of Halloween, which was just yesterday, which as you weren't recording this. And so I thought it'd be fun as a treat, since Halloween was just here, to go back and enjoy it. So enjoy this retro review of High School of the Dead. Welcome to another episode of Thomas's Prerogative right here on the Shaft Network. I welcome you all back to my humble abode here at the Absolution. And me and Sarah were ready to give you another fantastic review on this week's review topic. And what is this week's review topic? Well, that will be High School of the Dead. I have to laugh at it because it's very funny. It's, when this first was announced and first came out, honestly, I actually wasn't looking forward to it, as surprised as many people might be, being that I am a big ecchi fan service fan and everything. I'm sure a lot of people are like, wait a minute, Tommy doesn't look forward to an ecchi anime? But the truth of the matter is, again, this is something that I've always wanted to prove, and I think proves it, is that it's not the ecchi fan service that brings me to a lot of those shows, like Queen's Blade, Iki-Tosen, Sakurai, all of those shows. Yeah, they have tons of fan service. It's the story, though, that keeps me there. If it was just fan service, and this is something a lot of people, me, Gene and Chris, and a lot of real anime fans try to prove. Yeah, we love these shows, because they make us laugh. But for the most part, the reason we stick around and buy these shows and really enjoy them is because of the story. The fan service is just comedy. It's content. It makes us laugh. And, we'll get to all that. But I wasn't looking forward to the show because I'm actually not a zombie fan. I actually very much dislike zombie stories for the most part.
And we'll get to... I'll get to the reason why when we cover story, because it's definitely in this series, why I usually don't watch zombie stories. But, again, I wasn't looking forward to it, and, you know, as I started watching this, I was originally going watching this because, behind the scenes, we at the Shaft were going to try to do High School of the Dead for Shaft Theater this year at Metricon. Unfortunately, it was just over... it was just over the lines. Yeah, kind of like blanked there. But, we were only doing the first five episodes, but they said, no, it just went over the line too much, and which led to me trying to make a joke that, oh, we've been shut down, so we're going to do Godzilla vs. Megalon, which failed miserably. Thank you for all 10 of you who did show up and stay for at least a half hour. But, with that being said, let's get to the review of High School of the Dead now. High School of the Dead follows a group of teenage high schoolers as they try to survive a zombie apocalypse in Tokyo, Japan. Sounds simple enough, so let's get right to it with our review of High School of the Dead. With music, and I'm going to start off with talking about the intro and the outro. Now, one thing I want to say that I kind of love that the series is with music and art and story. So this goes into everything, but again, you know, also music as well. This series is really a throwback to the pop and camp style of the 60s. You know, it really is, it's not just a throwback to George Romero zombie flicks, but also sort of the pop and camp of zombie flicks of the 60s and 70s, specifically. And more importantly, that sort of pop and camp television type of style that was very popular in the late 60s. To an extent, there's two things I kind of compare High School of the Dead to. Probably the more well-known thing that it's not even close, and people will have to follow me on this, is the 1960s, or late 1960s, Batman television series. The pop and camp of it, I mean, it's much more crude and much more adult-type humor, but still, the pop and camp is much more like the 1980 Batman movie, but the 1967 Batman television series. The animation... I'm tripping all over myself. I apologize. And the other thing, which is probably only known by maybe comic book fans like me or people who are, you know, do both comics and anime for that matter, is Hack and Slash, which is written by Tim Seeley, and it's a comic book that sort of turns the slasher films of the 80s on its ear, and it follows this young girl who, you know, hunts slashers. And it's very poppy camp as well. But sort of the reason I bring this up is because the intro and the outro, but especially the intro, reminds me of, you know, the 1967 Batman television series. I mean, as far as sort of the thematically, as far as the way that the intro is set, It's a, when I hear it, that's actually the first thing I think of. I think of sort of that same Batman. Not that it's the same melody, but sort of, but like when you listen to the intro, and it sort of has this sort of lead in even. And so I just catch myself having a lot of, you know, oh man, this it's just thematically. And I'm not even I'm not talking melody, I'm not taking talking musical notes or anything. I'm just talking about the way the intro goes along. It's sort of set up and the song in the middle and that stuff. And it reminds me a lot of the 1967 Batman television series. And in that retrospect, if you really listen to sort of the melody and that stuff, it's a very sort of poppy intro song. It's pop rock, Japanese pop rock, for that matter. But, you know, again, it just is very, for a very serious and dark show, it's just very upbeat, you know, type of piece. And the same could be, to an extent, said for the outro, which, again, is another sort of hard rock track. And really, that does lead into the second topic, as far as music is concerned. That's the music throughout the anime. It's not just the intro and the outro that has sort of that rock style. Rock style can really be felt throughout the sort of series itself. Again, really lending it, I think, really lending itself to sort of that zombie pop culture, which when you think zombie pop culture, you do tend to think more heavy metal, more hard rock. And I kind of like that. I mean, and there's a bit of sort of hip-hop, and while there's a little bit more traditional pieces, like sort of Alluring Woman, which I believe was like during the, you know, episode 6, okay, yes, episode 6 is my favorite episode of the series. Gee, what an effing shock. But let's move on. Now that I've answered that question, which I knew everybody was waiting for. But, you know, I mean, it had more traditional pieces like that, but for the most part, it was, even in the softer songs, they were sort of leaning more towards that hard rock type of style. But overall, the music is very, very enjoyable. And this goes for the music and the art as well. It's a great contrast to the actual story, because the story itself is very dark. It's very bleak. And like I said, I'll get to this when we get to art as well. But, you know, both the music and the art, the best way I can describe them is they're very bright, very poppy. And I say that because, for all retrospect, it's a great sort of opposite, you know, sort of comparison piece to the bleakness that is the story. It helped, you know, and this is something we talk about when we talk about series that are ecchi and have ecchi fan service and all of that stuff. You know, because it's such a bright contrast to, which was the word I was trying to think of earlier, but a bright contrast to the bleakness of the story and the seriousness of the story, it makes the story more enjoyable. That's why we defend Ikitosen and Sakurai and Queensblade and all of these series so much, is that that's what that fan service does. It provides a funny and enjoyable contrast to the bleakness and seriousness of the story. Because if the story was just serious all the time, you know, you really wouldn't want to watch it. You know, look at Death Note as an example. Death Note is like serious all the time, and the mystery is just not enough to keep you interested. Whereas here, you know, because of the pop and the campiness and the ecchi fan service, which again leads to that pop and campiness, it keeps you involved. So with that being said, let's move on to art. Now with art, the first thing we're going to tackle is, you know, and I made mention to it a couple minutes ago, you know, pop and campiness, and brightness. I said the word brightness. That's, I think, the perfect word to describe sort of the artistic styling of this anime. I mean, even at night, it seems very bright at night in this anime. And, you know, that's the thing for me. It's like, this is a zombie apocalypse. You know, zombies are running wild. People are dying left and right. People are losing their mind, just shooting anything they want. It's just chaos. And yet, the colors that are used, it's always brighter. I mean, look at the school uniforms. It's sort of the... It's a lighter version of a dark green. You know, it's white and sort of a lighter version of the dark green when you look at sort of the school uniforms. And I mean, it's not that there's no blacks or anything, but, you know, for instance, Takashi's sort of black jacket with the red shirt underneath, the brightness of the red makes his costume pop, and that's going into something, or something else that I want to talk about later. But I just want to use it as an example. You know, all the colors that are used in this anime, you know, are very bright. They're lighter versions of, I mean, even the darker colors are sort of the lighter versions of that color. And they're all meant to be bright, and they're made to make the art pop out at you. Not like in 3D format, but, you know, again, that pop and campiness. You know, this is what pop was in, you know, the 1960s. They used bright colors, you know, to make the art pop out to you. That's why it was called pop art. You know, again, it's very much in sort of, especially when you look at that intro, the art of the intro and the sort of the psychedelic styles, it's really in the sort of the taste of Andy Warhol. You know, this seems like, and funny enough, I actually call High School of the Dead's intro, as far as the art of it, the Andy Warhol anime intro, because that's what it seems to me. But again, yeah, and I think that's, again, a great contrast to the bleakness that is the story. You have, you know, just these bright colors everywhere. It sort of metaphors into, you know, that little bit of hope that's still left. And I like that. I really give the animation team props for, you know, taking the chance on that, and I think it really worked. I think it serves as a great metaphor for, you know, that little bit of hope that still lingers when, you know, you have basically the apocalypse happening, and there's still that little bit of hope among the survivors. So I think that's just a great contrast. I'm going to go into character designs now. I have a list, and so I'm going to go down each character. We're going to start with Takashi Komaru. Or Komaru. Again, you know I'm bad with Japanese names. But like I said before, you know, I think his costume, or I don't want to call it a costume, but, you know, the way he's dressed perfectly accentuates his character. You know, again, the red makes the sort of the black jacket and stuff pop out. You know, again, using a brighter color underneath really makes that darker color on top pop out more. I love sort of the hairstyle. I don't want to say, oh, spiky hair equals a rebel, but, you know, from the way he's sort of dressed and sort of the way his hair is and everything, it does scream, you know, somebody different, someone unique. The best way I can describe it, it's very comparable to the, and I'm not a big Walking Dead fan, so I apologize for not knowing the main character's name. But to an extent, him, you know, he sort of had that same look. Like, he just seems like that everyman, and that sort of guy who, like, sort of grows into that leader. So, you know, I don't want to call him Spider-Man because he's not, but yeah, you know, it's just a sort of everyman look, if that makes any sense to anybody, that I really enjoy. And I think a lot of times we've sort of missed out on sort of that everyman look in our heroes, whether it be anime or comic books, for that matter. That's why I love Joey Jones and Hero Man. Moving on to Rei Miyamoto. I think her design is very, very interesting. You know, it's sort of that classic sort of heroine look. And after taking the chance on doing sort of the everyman, I think it's even or I think it makes it more of a chance to go with the sort of the more classic long blonde-haired heroine look. Again, and again, we're just talking about design as well. And again, all these girls, they pretty much have, they all have the same school outfit, but, as far as her skirt seems to be more, I don't want to say knee length, but just above the knee. Like Saya's a bit higher, and then of course, Seiko's is below the knee. And I think that fits into each one of their individual styles. I think it's just a big risk to in the sort of classic heroine look. Yet they made it work, and I give them props for that. I mean, when I first look at her, I think we need sort of the classic type of strong anime heroine. And I wondered if that was a risk, going with the more sort of everyman look for the male protagonist, or main male protagonist, and that was really unique. Again, moving on to Saya Takagi, sort of the classic Tsunade look. But I give him a prop for making the Tsunade the one with... I always give it props for, instead of making sort of the peppy girl the one with the pink hair, you make the Tsunade the one with the pink hair. And I just... That's such a unique thing. And her pink pigtails and everything, it's just an interesting look. And she's immediately a character that pops out to you. That's why I say it's such a risk, as far as I'm concerned, going more of the classic heroine look with Rei, because, again, compared to both Seiko and Saya and Shizuka, she doesn't pop out as much as they do, though, in all fairness, Shizuka pops out for a different reason. Well, get to that. Saya is just, she pops out, she's an immediately recognizable character, and the pink just goes great with her stature, and I think that works very well. Especially also works well with her attitude, but we'll get to that later. Seiko Bushijumi, this is my favorite character. I just think her look, the long black hair and sort of darkness within her character design, you can really feel it when you first see her, and it's... I just think it's perfect. Like I said, she's my favorite character design in the series. And I think that's the reason why a lot of people love her character. It's just such a great design from the hair all the way down to having the long skirt. And then sort of the other outfit she wears, definitely fit, what her design is. The sort of darkness within, being that for the most part, she's sort of like the big sister of the entire group, she has this inner darkness about her, and her design accentuates sort of that big sister, both the big sisterness of her and sort of the darkness within. It's just a fun design to look at. Kohato Irano is actually my second favorite character design in this series. More often than not, you try to have a sort of that second male character be a pretty boy. And so to sort of go with the sort of fat otaku, shall we say, fits perfectly. It also fits along with the pop in camp, but we'll get to that when we get to story. But again, white shirt, a bright color underneath the jacket, really accentuates the school uniform that he wears. And when he's in his little army uniform, it's... it's just hilarious. So, definitely, I think it's a great design. It was, again, it was another risk, and yet I think that risk definitely worked. Shizuka Marikawa. Like I said, she really pops out. But, in all seriousness, it's sort of the classic peppy, sort of ditzy character. Yeah, what more can you say? I mean, there really isn't anything unique other than that, but, it is funny to see the ditzy character be the one with the excuse my language, biggest chest. I want to say another word, but PG show. But definitely, she has the biggest chest. she definitely stands out. But, I mean, when compared to the other characters, you know, she's just really the classic ditzy type of character. And so, you know, she's probably the second most plain character, with Rey being the first. And then Alice Marisato, you know, her design just leaves me personally confused. Because I guess I should correct myself on Rey and Suzuka. They're not as plain as she is, but, you know, she's this sort of child character. And, you know, she's a child. You know, she's meant to be cute. She's meant to, you know, learn worry and things like that. And so, what more can you say? I mean, really, that's all I got to say about that. So, let's move on to story. Before we move on to story, I just realized that I forgot one more talking point in music. And that was I was going to talk about voice acting. And just to go down to, I have a list of the voice actors. You have Leonard Azuda, who played Takashi. Again, I talked about the everyman in his design, and I thought Leonardo perfectly brought out that everyman. Because, again, when you hear him speak, he sounds like a normal guy. And that's, I think, a very important for this hero of this series to sound and, you know, be a normal guy. Because I think that's something that a lot of us can compare to, is sort of that normalcy, especially in a huge crisis. A lot of times, he tends to be, oddly enough, the voice of reason. You know, he's the one who, you know, is, you know, usually the most vigilant. You know, while everybody is breaking down around him, he's the one who's, you know, most vigilant. And, you know, you really hear that in the voice. Jessica Boone plays Rey, and she does a great job just making Rey sound like a lost soul. And that's a constant thing I have with Rey, is that, you know, she is a lost soul. She doesn't know what she wants. And, you know, especially now that her whole world's been turned upside down. So, Jessica Boone does a great job. I said something else, sorry. Maggie Fletno did Saya. And she did a great Tsunade voice, you know. It gets a bit annoying at sometimes, but for the most part, it, you know, it's the classic Tsunade, and, you know, I really didn't hear anything wrong with her voice. Terrell Hannah played Sekko, and God, again, a lot of people, this is the favorite character of the series, and, you know, again, it's just the all-around, you know, her character story, her design, and her voice, and Hannah does a wonderful job with this voice, you know. It's subdued, yet it's not monotoned, and that's sometimes very hard to do. A lot of voice actors will sometimes do, you know, be subdued, and so they'll do a monotone voice, and yet there's just great different pitches and everything. There's so many different tones with her voice, and yet she's subdued, and it's just a great voice to listen to. Monica Rial is Monica Rial. She plays Suzuka. And she has the perfect ditzy voice. Same thing with Brittany Kowalski, who plays Alice. You know, again, they were typecast. Let's not mince it. They were typecast. But again, I don't have a problem with it, because they do those types of roles perfectly. And Mark X. Lazowski played Kohata. And he did an awesome voice. I love, especially when he gets excited about the guns he's wielding. Yeah, you can hear it in the voice, just the, like, under-the-breath excitement that Kohato feels, and Mark did a great job with that. So, moving on with story, my first talking point is I really want to talk about, really, again, how this series is pop and camp, and how it is an homage to zombie pop culture. And, you know, again, all of its fan service. And when I talk about fan service, I'm not just talking about its ecchi fan service. I'm also talking about the gun fan service and sort of the pop culture fan service, not just of zombie films, but of sort of popular pop culture sort of fan service. Because, you know, if you look at some of the titles, for instance, Guns and Dead, you know, is a reference to Guns and Roses, and The Good, the Bad, and the Dead is a reference to The Good and Bad and Ugly. But all the fan service, the Ecchi fan service, the Gun fan service, again, this is pop and camp. This type of show of fan service is pop and camp. And again, I've been saying before, this is a campy show, and it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be a campy show. And it's all, in the sense, a paying homage to sort of the zombie films of George Romero, but also the zombie films of the late 60s and early 70s. And if you really watch those, they can get really campy. I mean, watch the original Dawn of the Dead, which I believe that's the one with the... Again, I'm not big on my zombie films, but if I remember, I believe Dawn of the Dead is the one in the mall. And again, I'm not talking about the remake in, like, 2004, I think. I'm talking about the one from, I believe, the early 70s. And you had that scene towards the end where the zombie's just slowly coming to the helicopter. And, you know, gets his head cut off by the rotor blades. That's just such a campy scene. It's a funny scene. And to a respect, I love it when I lose the ability to talk. But to a respect, you know, that's what slasher films and zombie films and these sort of horror films do to be successful. It's also, again, the same thing that these ecchi fan service shows that have a lot of sexual humor do. It's camp. And what it does, and you have to understand what it does. What it does is, we are in a bleak and serious story. But you have this fan service, you have sort of these cheesy deaths, you have, you know, boobies and all of this stuff. And it is unnecessary, but that's the point. Because it's unnecessary, it becomes funny, it becomes campy, and it becomes fun. You know, for all the people that talk bad about the 1967 Batman television series, the truth of the matter is, there were a lot of people that were also fans of it. So much so that there were a lot of people who weren't expecting the darkness of the 1989 Batman series, and a lot of people thought it was too dark. Because, again, they were used to that, and it was very enjoyable. You know, part of the reason the 1967 Batman television series was such a success was because, yeah, I mean, you had the simple adventure for kids, but the campiness was just so funny to the adults, and that's why families could sit down and enjoy it. We have sort of the same type of thing here in the campiness, in the sense of that, you know, you have the fan service of not only referencing pop culture, but also taking things from zombie pop culture, you know, things like they react to sound, they don't have sight, they can't really see well, and they really don't have any senses, but they're very keen to sounds. And sort of the way that they're able to sneak around them, and sort of that they burn with fire, you know, just taking classic zombie pop culture and integrating it into the series. And then, of course, you know, the Gun fan service, you know, which, you know, shocking that more American fans, especially conservative American fans, or should I say American anime fans who are consider themselves conservatives, aren't more into, considering just different amount of, you know, guns, and these are real guns. I'm actually very interested in guns, so I like the Gun fan service, because it's interesting to see the specs on the guns and things like that. I mean, I know it surprises people that I'm actually interested in the guns, considering I consider myself a liberal, but, you know, that's a story for another day. And then, of course, you know, you have the ecchi fan service, and again, its purpose is to be ridiculous. It's supposed to, so you'll laugh, because that's what you're supposed to. You're supposed to laugh, because it brings out that brightness, that campiness, that is part of the story. You can't have this story without that campiness. So yes, in the scene where you have Takashi laying Ray down with the sniper rifle, and he's shooting the guns, and the ricochet is bouncing off her boobs, and then you have the Matrix slow motion through Seiko's boobs and under her and seeing her panties. Yeah, is it ridiculous? It is absolutely ridiculous, but it is supposed to be, because you're supposed to laugh. And if you are not laughing at that, you seriously need help. I'm sorry. You must have lost your funny bone somewhere, because I don't know how you can't find that funny. You know, I think it leads to something else, but that is a topic for another day. And in fact, fan service will be my topic for my first Thomas's Prerogative editorial, which is coming later this month. But again, it's all perfectly integrated, and again, it serves as a brightness to the seriousness and the bleakness that is the story. Now, speaking of that bleakness, there are some flaws in this, and it's not with the fan service or the campiness. It's actually in the sense of what this story is. Now, as I said before, I'm not really a fan of zombie flicks, and there's a reason for that, and that's because I just feel that zombie plots are very much flawed, no matter how good the series is. I mean, there's good zombie series like Walking Dead, this, and some others, but they are ultimately flawed because they do use the same thing. You know, the zombie apocalypse, the zombies are basically like a plague, you know, and it just comes out of nowhere, and all of a sudden the entire world is just, it's like in a matter of seconds, people are just infected, and to, it's one thing I hate about zombie films and zombie stories. They don't go into the origins. Now, that's something, and I'm going to constantly bring this up. It's the one reason why I love Resident Evil. Because with Resident Evil, you've gone into the origin. It shows you the origin. It shows you how it slowly grew and how the infestation grew from that one house and everything. And among other things, as I said, I'll get to. But, you know, with these stories, it just appears. And again, it's campy. Oh, it's really not campy. Because these are the type of things that just, you can't get away with being campy about. You know, this is information. And I really think it's important for this type of information to get out. And a lot of times, these zombie films and zombie series don't give it. I mean, it just appears, you know? I mean, I want to know details. What is it? How are they turning? We want to know the science into how they turn, and, you know, they never give it. And it's just, for me, I find that a fatal flaw, because you need to understand this. And again, it goes also to usually how these series ends. These are survival series. They don't have a happy ending. I mean, this is the ending of every zombie film. They survive the next day. There is no end to the apocalypse. They seem to go, the zombies, something like the new infestation. They're the new dominant species of the earth. And it's like, you know, they either die or somehow survive to the next day. You know, that's what zombie series are. But even more than that, it's what that comes to represent. Because it's about surviving to the next day, a lot of times these series are just so heavy on the, oh, humans are horrible, terrible creatures that, you know, once they reach their breaking point, will turn on each other. You know, and I've never liked that story. It's because it sort of insinuates that we, as intelligent creatures that we are, don't have the ability, you know, we as humans, you know, we're horrible, terrible creatures, and we're not, you know, willing to do quarantines, and, you know, we're not willing to, I've lost my train of thought here, but, you know, we're willing to turn on each other in a heartbeat. That's why one of the early scenes in the first episode, where, you know, you have the two girls who are skipping together, and we're BFFs for life, and then she gets grabbed by a zombie, and she immediately turns to her friend for help, and she goes, just like that, oh, get off me, and kicks her down the stairs before she gets caught herself. And it, to me, it's just so much of a ridiculous scene. And, you know, I look at it, I'm like, okay, I get it. Humans are horrible, terrible creatures. Move on. It's just that thing, you know? And it's, it's something that frustrates me when it comes to zombie stories. Yeah, it takes me off, and I just wish zombie stories would try something new in that retrospect. Now, what does save this series as far as the story is concerned is the individual characters. And again, if you've listened to interviews with the story creator, you'd know that he tackled the individual characters as he looked at it sort of like a D&D game, Dungeons and Dragons. And so, like, certain characters were tanks, some were wizards, Saya was the wizard, Takashi and Seiko were, and Rei for that matter, were tanks. You know, Kohato was sort of, is the ranger to an extent. Shizuka is, the med. And Alice is sort of the scout to an extent. And so, that is such an interesting way to approach the characters. And what saves the story is that it is about this one group of survivors. It becomes something that is more than just how horrible humans are. There are individual points that continuously comes up, again, paying homage to the classic zombie plot, even though I hate it, but there's a lot more focused on how this is growing them as character, how this crisis is growing these characters from teenagers to adults. And I'm going to go quickly into the sort of individual characters here. Takashi, again, like I said, the everyman, and he really becomes the leader of the group. He really becomes sort of the heart and soul of the group. And, Seiko mentions it, he's the one who will save us all. Even though Saya says that, if him and Kato were to lose it, they'd be done for, Seiko says, that's why I'm here to remind them I'm a woman. But for the most part, what she's saying, he is the heart and soul, and he's not to. She has faith in them. And a large part of it is, Takashi, he's the one who initially takes action. When he sees the zombie bite the teacher, he's the one who goes and takes action, and he immediately knows what happened. He immediately, dictates the situation and does something about it. He's quick to think on his feet, and it makes him a great leader. Rei, I know Rei gets deeper development in the manga, but in this series, at the beginning of the manga, and for that part for this series, she sometimes seems out of place. But if I had to figure, she's sort of a reminder to Takashi to why he needs to survive. He does have that promise in his mind. And as the series goes along, she slowly starts to grow up. She slowly starts to realize what Takashi's been telling her, that, everything's changed. And she's a character that you have to feel for because, she was having a good life and just everything has just changed in an instant. And she sort of represents what most people would be going through. And so I think a lot of people can connect with her character because of that. Saya, being that she's the mage, as I put it earlier, she's the tactician in the group. She knows everything that needs to know. And she becomes, to an extent, the narrator of the story. Because, she's smart enough to know what's going to happen next. She studied human reaction, and so she knows what's coming. And so it makes her a very important part of the group. Seiko, again, I want to call her the backbone. Because, again, she's that big sister, and she does a lot to help keep the group together. And when everybody else is having a problem, she's the one who's always there to help them. And it makes her, again, why so many people love her. Kohata is just a hilarious character with, his gun knowledge. And really, that's a large part of the reason why he's there. He's not only is he the ranger, who's, arching from the back, but, he provides, he provides that gun fan service and everything. Shizuku, again, she's there to be the ditzy fan service, and Alice is, the girl that needs to be saved. Well, But the way these individual characters grow throughout the story is what makes this series so enjoyable. You know, they could have just as easily just made this a classic sort of pop culture zombie survival story. And yet it's become more because the individual characters grow so much. And this series is so much about their growth through a crisis as it is a zombie apocalypse. And going into my final thoughts, that's what saves this series for me. You know, I mean, if I had to rate this series, I'd give it a 4. And, you know, like I said, when this was first announced and came out, I wasn't watching it because I really didn't think I'd like it. Because, again, all of those zombie stereotypes and everything. But I ended up enjoying it. I enjoyed it for the pop and camp, definitely, which was funny. But the thing that made me continue watching it was the individual stories of the characters. I mean, you have great music, you have great art and character designs, great comedy, but those individual stories is what holds me on and makes me want to go to the next chapter, go to the next episode. So this is definitely a series I think everybody should check out. That's it for this episode of Thomas's Prerogative. I will be going on a 2-week hiatus as I'm going up north to see my cousin for his bar mitzvah. He now becomes a man. So remember to check out all my other stuff on the Shaft Network, along with all the other podcasts on the Shaft Network as well, which you can find at www.shaftnetwork.com. You can also check out all my other podcasts, Tokyo SOS Podcast, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com, and Comic Book Crazy, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Remember to send me feedback either on the Shaft Network site or by emailing the Shaft Network at shaftnetwork@gmail.com. And that's it for this week, anime fans. So until next time, I'm Thomas Mattis, and that's been my prerogative. Peace.